All right, forget ChatGPT. That's old news. You're talking about ChatGPT. My mom knows ChatGPT. Today, we're playing a little game called Blow My Mind with AI. And me and Sam, we set each other a little challenge. I said, I'm going to bring some AI tools that I think are pretty cool. You do the same. Let's have a little show and tell. Let's get smarter together about cool things you can do with AI.
I feel like I can rule the world. I know I could be what I want to. I put my all in it like no days off. On the road, let's travel. Never.
So the premise for the episode is, what are the AI tools that everybody should know about? That it feels like you're on the bleeding edge of something, or you're on to something that's going to be big in the future. And that's what I want to see today. Okay, so you've seen, everybody talks about agents. Oh, agents, love agents. Agents are all the rage. Is anybody using an agent? What are they using agents for? This is kind of, I got into a rage about agents. And I was like, let me see if I can get one useful agent working. And I tried a bunch of different tools, but I want to show you a fun one that, this guy Garrett made. So Garrett is the founder of Pipe Dream, which is a very cool company. He's in Austin. You might know him, actually. They're basically, these guys are building like underground delivery tunnels.
Is this company working?
Yeah. It's a really hard company. But like they built this thing, like check this out. In Austin, they have this first thing called Goods, which is like an autonomous, it's kind of like DoorDash or Instacart, but it's like the fastest grocery pickup in the world. So you order it and then 2 minutes, like there's a crate of things that have been picked that gets whooped to you and you go pick it up from your local like Goods locker type of thing.
That's insane.
Okay, so check this out. So he, I guess as a side project, he built this thing called Do Anything. And I want to give it a shout because a lot of people know about Claude and these other things. And I thought this was a pretty cool site. So if you go to doanything.com, you'll see it. But I'm going to show you what this can do. So check this out. I go to this thing. It says Do Anything. And it basically that promises, just tell me what to do. I'll go do it. It's a to-do list that does itself. So I said, analyze my YouTube channel performance like you're a world-class content strategist. The channel's called My First Million on YouTube. It's a podcast. I couldn't even bother to give it the link. I was like, I don't know. See if you can figure this out. So it thinks about it. And then it's like, at first it asked me, it was like, hey, can you log in with YouTube? And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that right now. I don't know the password. I'm just going to say no to that. So tell me what you could do. And so it says, okay, got it. And so it does the reflection. Now here's what it does. So here it gives me the State of the Union report. This is now like a couple minutes later. So it says, State of the Union, you've built a powerhouse with 869,000 subscribers and 300 million total views. That's a massive footprint in the business niche. However, a world-class strategist looks past the vanity metrics to see the real story. And then it's like, your average videos get 20 to 45,000 views. For a channel with nearly 900,000 subscribers, that's a big lag where your core audience, only 3 to 5% are clicking on new uploads immediately. And then it looked at what are winner episodes, why that title was good, what's working, what's not. Strategic recommendations.
That's a great title. Wait, scroll up. It says, how to make $1 million so fast, your accountant gets worried.
Gets nervous. Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, okay, that's already better than like, you know, most of the titles we come up with when we try, and it did it right away. And then it basically says, okay, here's what I think you should be doing, right? Double down on contrarian wisdom. So instead of just guest X tells their story, it's why everything you know about X topic is wrong. Get your thumbnails right, whatever. Get your shorts to lead to longs. And then it was like, I can help more. And so then I said, okay. I said, create a one-month content plan designed to 10x our monthly views while staying on brand and in our niche of business junkies, money wisdom, and cool business trends.
Let's just make a comment here. You did this 19 minutes before we were supposed to record.
Yeah. Yes, I did. And look what it did. Okay, so then it starts doing it. And it's like, all right, here's a one-month outlier content plan. And it started to say, look, we're going to go all in on video essays because they're going to have a higher conversion rate and a higher AVD. We're going to make our thumbnails feel like a business documentary rather than like two guys talking on a podcast, like a Zoom call. And for topic selection, we're going to look for things that are a big promise with low friction. You know, unsexy businesses, money traps to avoid, a one-person million-dollar portfolio, how to do it. And then it gave me this sheet that was like, here's your plan. So it's like, it starts giving me actual videos, how to build a one-person million-dollar portfolio in 2026. And then it's like, brutal truth series. So why your 9-to-5 is actually your biggest financial risk, the 7 money traps that are keeping you poor, future hype, the next NVIDIA, the death of SaaS, what's going to replace SaaS, inside the brain of a billionaire, how X built a $100 billion empire. 17 lessons from 1,000 episodes of My First Million. And then it basically starts to give you those. And then it's like, would you like me to script these out? Which one of these do you like? Would you like me to come up with thumbnail ideas? And you just keep saying, yeah, yeah, go ahead. Keep going. Yeah, have at it. Knock yourself out. And you just do that. Like, isn't that, I mean, I just feel like the idea of having background workers that are going to be constantly working for you. And by the way, this is getting better and better. So have you seen ChatGPT's Pulse feature?
Yeah, I pay for it. It's expensive, but it's pretty great.
But it's cool, right? It knows what you're already trying to do. And it's like, cool, every day I'll just proactively search for stuff and I'll write stuff to you about the things you care about. Like, you don't have to prompt me. I'll just come up with prompts and I'll just serve it to you. And I just think like this is getting more and more that way where it's like automatically triggered by reading what's going on. So I'm downloading these other tools that basically will like read all my Slack messages. And then based off of what's being said, it'll just go try to do the work. So Furkan is working on a tool like this called Nebula. It's an app that you basically go in, you connect your Slack, your Gmail, whatever you want to connect, your Google Calendar. And it just knows, it's like, cool, if you give me your calendar, I know what meetings are coming up. I'll just create prep docs for you for every meeting that you have coming up. I haven't gotten this to work for me good enough yet because it's like, Furkan's one of my good friends and this is like an early prototype. So, you know, fair warning, this is not like the most, you know, functional thing yet. But like I'm playing with it because this one does it. This one has an even more interesting premise, which is basically you don't need to ask me what to do. I should be able to figure out what to do based on what's going on. And so, you know, in their case, it's like, cool, if a bunch of people on your team uploaded new code to GitHub, I will automatically go read it, summarize the changes, and just tell you about it tomorrow morning. You don't need to tell me, go look at GitHub. I know I'm connected to GitHub. If something changed, I'm going to tell you about it.
So is this worth trying now?
Yeah. So for me, it's not that useful because I don't have a huge team on my like core team. So like, you know, we don't have a daily stand-up. We don't push code to GitHub. Like, you know, it's just like three of us and we mostly just talk to each other. Like I already saw the messages. But if you have, you know, a 10-person, 20-person, 30-person team, this can be extremely useful, right? And you just set up different workflows of saying like, hey, keep checking my dashboards and giving me summaries and tell me when anything pops off, right? You could just tell it to do stuff like that in a chat interface and it figures out how to do it. That's the idea behind something like this.
With everything is, I mean, this can do your job for you. Like, I'm already using ChatGPT. Like, sometimes if I get in an argument with one of my employees or like if I'm like, what they did angers me, but I need to be productive about it and reply in a way that solves the problem, I'll upload the email and be like, you know, my instinct is to like write this angry thing, but like, obviously I know that's not right. Can you like help me like write this email in a way that gets me what I want?
Right.
And so it's already like doing a lot of the talking anyway.
Hey, quick break, because if you're liking this episode about AI tools, I have something else you might be into. A while back, our friend Greg came on the pod and did a show and tell of his own. He walked through five tools that you can use to build a business that doesn't require a bunch of employees or a lot of capital. And they're not the obvious AI tools that everyone's talking about. They're more of the underrated, under the radar tools that, you know, the sort of power nerds like us and Greg try to find and try. So if you're looking for a list of AI tools that you can check out and kick around for your business, you can get it right now. It's in the description below, totally free. Hope you enjoy that. And now back to this episode. Are you using Whisperflow?
Oh my God, dude, I barely type anymore. Do you use it on your cell phone? It's so good on the phone too.
So Whisperflow is pretty amazing. It's an app that basically does just amazing text-to-speech. So that's actually the wrong way of saying it. That's kind of the nerdy way. What's the real way of saying it? Typing is a pretty slow thing to do. It actually requires a lot of energy, and you don't really realize it until you're able to just like stop doing it. So what Whisperflow is it's on your phone. So like if I go to our iMessage, there's a thing that just says start flow. So all I do is I just click this button. And so any app that I'm in, right? This is not like just in ChatGPT or just in Gemini. I could do this in Slack. I could do this on Facebook. I could do this on Instagram. I could write a caption. I could write an email. I can do this anywhere. I just hit start flow. I'll be like, and then it just, now it's listening. So I say, hey Sam, for today's episode, do you want to do the AI episode? Next line. I'm thinking that we could each show two or three different cool apps. I'm not sure if you've already prepped it, but I have two for sure that I can do. Let me know what you're thinking. Boom. And now it's got that captured perfectly. And what's cool about this is because this is all they specialize in, they start to notice like, oh, I like to break up lines. Like I kind of I go back and I remove periods. I think they look too formal in text message. I think it makes you come across like an asshole. I will separate lines out by pushing enter. I don't like big blocks of paragraph text. So it learns as I do that once, twice. Then the next time, it's just going to do it automatically. It's going to format it automatically to look more like me.
Mine will add bullet points. So I'll be like, hey, I've been thinking about these three things. The first thing is this. The second thing is this other thing. And the third thing was this thing. Also, I was thinking, actually, I didn't mean to say that. Also,
yeah,
I was
that.
Yeah. And so it does one, two, three. And then, when I said, actually, I didn't mean that. I meant the fourth thing. Like it actually adds a fourth and it doesn't say what I said previously.
And so this can be pretty powerful. Like I will go for a walk. I'll go walk my dog, pop an AirPod in, and I can just come up with whether it's an email or a blog post or something I'm trying to write, a book chapter, whatever it is. And I'll just ramble. I'm just talking for like 30 minutes. I'm like, what I could say is that, you know, creativity is the new productivity, that the last 50 years have been about who can be most productive. But now with AI, everybody's instantly productive. It's actually about who's got the best ideas. So creativity is the new productivity. I think that's a good point. So I'll just talk like that, just rambling. And at the end, I'll just give that to, you know, ChatGPT or a different service. And I'll be like, hey, can you remove the rambly parts and like structure this and organize this well for me? Make this into an actual book chapter. And it'll like give me something that's 85, 90% there. And I didn't have to even have my phone out. Didn't have to look down at my screen. I'm out in nature just walking around. Like it's a very different way of working that, you know, my dad, if he saw it, he'd be like, this is not work. What are you talking? What are you doing? I don't even understand what's happening right now.
I think that's the difference between the winners and the losers. Basically, the people are going to use it and they're going to 10 or 100x their output. And the losers are going to be, this is too new. This is too fast. We should keep it old school.
Yeah, exactly. I wrote this blog post 6 months ago, a year ago, something like this. And I basically called it the K-shape economy, which is like, people are saying, oh, AI is going to take your job. And of course it will, if you don't use it. It's like, yeah, computers, you know, take jobs too. And I basically said like, the K-shaped economy is that it's not that your whole job goes away, but a job is basically a bundle of tasks, okay? So like, even if you work at a grocery store, your job is a bundle of tasks. Maybe you're restocking shelves, maybe you're at the checkout thing, maybe you're bagging, maybe you're pushing carts, whatever you're doing, right? It's a bundle of tasks. And so first you have to think about what is the bundle of tasks that is in my job? And then you have to say, how many of those can I get AI to do instead of me or to make me way better at doing than I'm currently doing it? And so I said, basically 80% of those tasks will basically be replaced by AI. And then 20% of those tasks will become enhanced by AI. So things that you'll be able to do much better. And so, you know, if you just take any of the things that we talked about just now, right? Like let's take the YouTube content strategist, right? That's a job. Well, now if I can just say, hey, you should set up a little machine that is constantly scanning YouTube to find what other adjacent channels are doing, what's working, what are outlier videos, breaking those down into like, and then have a second thing that analyzes those and says, okay, that was an outlier. Why do I think that worked so well? Then it takes that and it references it against the My First Million like brand corpus and says, what should you guys be doing? That like, how could you take this outlier video and make it your own? And like using that to then pitch us, you know, kind of like,
this is crazy.
Here's what I think you guys should be doing. Now, all of a sudden you're 10 times better at your job. Even better would be like, so Google keeps releasing these like really powerful things, but they suck at marketing them. And so if you just kind of poke around what Google's got, they actually kind of have better tools for a lot of things. So there's this thing called Notebook LM. And if you just go to like the homepage of it, so let me just go to the homepage real quick. It's like you just create a notebook. So if you say, all right, I want you to make something for me or teach me something, it's like a great way to learn about anything. So what I did was you can drop in any podcast. So Dwarkesh does great AI podcasts. So Dwarkesh has a great podcast. Karpathy came on. Karpathy was the former head of AI at Tesla, and he's like one of the self-driving gurus and probably one of the best thinkers about AI in the world. So it's an hour and a half. I can either listen to it or I can first just get a quick summary of it. So I just drop in the link to it, and here's what it made. So I dropped in the link, and then I said, turn this into a slide deck, and it created this. So it creates this thing called Summoning Ghosts, the Decade of AI Agents, and it created this slide deck, this entire presentation that just was auto-generated from me giving it one YouTube link to the podcast. So it says, it's not the year of agents, it's the decade of agents. Here's a quote from him. He says, I have 15 years of experience with people making predictions. if I just average out, it feels like a decade for me. And then he's like talking about like animals versus AI. Wait.
Can you go back? Let me see exactly how you did it. So all of these images are from It Made It.
He didn't show anything. It just looks at the transcript and it turns it into a PowerPoint presentation. Right?
God.
So this is amazing.
Oh my
right?
God.
So,
this is, what's this called on Google?
Notebook LM.
I know, but I use that. What's this feature called?
This is Notebook LM. I just dropped in. I just click, see here on the right, I click slide deck. So all I did was I just gave it the link, right? I gave it this YouTube link. See this YouTube video right here? I just dropped in the link. I didn't watch the video. And then I said, make me a slide deck about it. It took like 10 minutes and then it made it. So like, okay, that's cool. Then you think about what comes next. So I saw this guy, Fabian,
Were all those graphics legible? Like, did it all make sense? Because there was
They're all legible as in they're not just gibberish. But, you know, like this wouldn't be like, I'm sure there's some things in here that are a little bit off or a little bit dumb.
But some of them were really intricate.
Overly complicated. Like, I don't know what this is. Like this chart looks like kind of crazy. So I'm not sure how useful this is, but like I saw somebody do this with Ray Dalio. Ray Dalio gave a talk somewhere and he turned it into this. And I was like, oh, wow, this is so much better than going and listening to Ray Dalio talk for an hour. Like I can get this. And now I might actually be interested in listening to the full talk, but this gave me the gist of it. Okay, so then check this out. So
man, staying on top of all this stuff is really hard.
So now this guy built a tool that basically makes presentations look sick. So the thing I gave you before was cool because it made the presentation, but it looked kind of like, I don't know,
some of the standard, graphs were a little
academic,
janky.
A little whatever. So check out this guy's thing. So he's like,
do all of my presentation decks like this.
Okay, watch this animation. So he's he gave it his slides and he was like, or he gave it like an initial slide and then the outline of what he wanted to talk about. Watch
Looks
what
cool,
it makes. Watch this animation.
Exactly in the style.
So when you just scroll,
Check out what happens if I start playing my presentation. I get not only perfect slides, I also get, check out what happens.
He just gave it this and then it transitioned perfectly into the next slide. So the next slide looked like this, static, right? The first slide looked like this, static. AI made it so that it will automatically make it look like you animated one into the other, but they weren't related at all.
That I wanted it to be, but
isn't that
check
sick?
Out
what was this called? What's this called?
That I've made.
You know what I mean? Like, how sick is this? These are just two independent slides. Remember how Prezi broke everyone's mind because it would like whoosh over from like one slide to the next? This was like Prezi, but the AI thing for me. I was like, oh, that's amazing. I want my shit to look like that.
Glyph.slides.pages.
Yeah, so it's this guy, Fabian, posted this, and his app is called Glyph.app. I haven't actually tried to use it to make one of these, but I thought that the demo was unbelievable. It's kind of like, you know, in any animation, you have a start point and an end point, and then usually you have to create every step in between, like the 30 steps in between the keyframes, right? The where it starts and where it's supposed to end. And with AI, you just show it the start and the end, and it just automatically will animate it to make it look like A transformed into B. How cool was that? And by the way, he didn't even make that. He just used this off-the-shelf thing called Kling that does like video transitions. And he's like, oh, what if I just plug video transitions into a slide deck? Will that work? And then boom, it worked. Today's episode is brought to you by HubSpot. Did you know that most businesses only use 20% of their data? That's like reading a book, but then tearing out 4/5 of the pages. Point is, you miss a lot. And unless you're using HubSpot, the customer platform that gives you access to the data you need to grow your business, the insights that are trapped in emails, call logs, transcripts, all that unstructured data makes all the difference. Because when you know more, you grow more. And so if you want to read the whole book instead of just reading part of it, visit HubSpot.com.
Okay. So here I'm showing off stuff that I made with AI. So I was using Claude Code all week or Claude Cowork. I don't even know the difference, to be honest. I think Claude Code is one thing and Cowork is an easier way to use Claude Code. Is that right?
Yeah. Code is like you're going to create a program. Cowork is like a junior worker that you could be like, hey, can you analyze this data? Hey, can you create this plan? Hey, can you make a presentation out of this? You hand off work to in Cowork.
Okay, so I made a thing. So look, here's the problem. I read a ton of business biographies. You want to read a ton of business biographies. I don't know if you actually do, but you say you want. Someone in the comments on YouTube said Sean's misogy this year is to finish a book, which is pretty fun.
It's going to be a tough one.
So I like reading biographies. business biographies because it's a great way to learn about business, but also it makes me feel better about my life because you see the problems that other entrepreneurs had. So, it makes you not feel alone. But when you read a 400 or 500 page biography, A, you lose track of the timeline. B, it's hard to know exactly what applies to you. And C, if you read a biography, let's say it's from a biography from the 1930s or 1940s, they'll talk about dollar signs or dollar numbers. And it's hard to take that and immediately apply it to modern day.
Terms.
Yeah. They'll be like, oh, John Rockefeller bought this thing for $50,000. I'm like, well, that's not a lot of money. It's like, oh, well, that was actually like $8 million. Okay, so now I have the context. So I built an app where here's what it does. I can download and then upload 1 to 5 business biographies all in the same person. Because the way that I tend to read is, let's say I want to learn about Ted Turner, I'll go and read literally 3 or 4 biographies on him to get like different context. And so I made this for my pre-work, pre-reading, because I'm kind of weird. I like to say, I'm going to learn all about Ted Turner. I'm going to go read these 3 or 4 or 5 business biographies. So I made a website where I can upload 3 or 4 or 5 of them, either PDF, EPUB, Mobi, or text versions.
So just to slow that down. So do you go to Amazon, you buy the Kindle thing, or you're going somewhere else to get the PDF or the EPUB or whatever?
I do read the hardcovers, but in order to make this work, the easiest part is to do some bootleg.
Okay,
so you do need to download them illegally, but I don't feel bad because I'm paying for the book anyway. So anyway, I upload it to a website and I've been able to basically make a business Wikipedia. So let me explain what I mean. So here's what the site looks like. So it's called Bio to Notion because the output is going to be a Notion page. So here's an example. I had this book about Ted Turner. I uploaded it and the output, which I'll show you in a second. It takes like 5 minutes. So I'm just going to show you the final output is basically this. So check this out. So my output is a Ted Turner business empire timeline and financial history. And so the first part is it tells me 3 to 5 bullet points that I could read from his journey. Now here's my favorite part. It gives me a financial summary. So Wikipedia is great, but it doesn't dive deep on the numbers. So it makes it challenging to actually understand how I can.
It's not nosy enough.
It's not nosy enough. Yeah, I want to know about numbers. And so I create a financial summary of his whole entire life, where as you can see, I adjusted the money to 2025 era. And it will go through each major
portion. Ted Turner, age 24, he's worth about $10 million in today's money. He had $1 million company back then. By the time he's 31... he's now worth maybe $16 million net worth.
Yeah.
And then he crosses 100 when he's 37 years old. Very cool.
Yeah. Yes. And then what it does is it goes through each section, just like Wikipedia does, and the milestones of someone's life. But I have it focused
Sam, I got to ask, on that table, so it's taking raw info from the book, because the book is not telling you at age 31, he was worth an estimated this many dollars
it's
in today's
guessing.
Dollars. It's kind of like it takes the raw and then it basically does AI analysis to try to figure out okay, if it said his company was worth X and he probably owned, let's call it 75% at this point.
Yeah.
And then he would be worth this much money. Is that what it's doing? Did you tell it to do that?
I told it to do that. For example, Ted Turner, his father owned a billboard company. His father died when Ted was only 22 or 24 years old. And Ted inherited the business. But in order to inherit it, he actually had to raise money, debt, in order to buy back a bunch of the assets. Because, long story, his dad was mentally ill and sold a bunch of parts of the company and bad deals. He had to raise money, Ted did, to buy back the business. So that's why it says he had $1 million company and it was just adjusted to $10 million. And then as Ted's story grows, he goes from billboard company to buying radio stations, to buying TV stations, to ultimately buying the Braves, and then starting CNN in his 40s. And so this kind of paints the picture of his major transactions.
Very cool. Okay, love it. Already I learned something, which is the thing he's known for, let's call CNN, didn't start till he was 40. I'm not even 40 yet. It's your best work could be ahead of you. Just one big takeaway right away.
It's crazy, right? And just like Wikipedia, because I love Wikipedia. I read Wikipedia like crazy. I love how they break it into a bio and they just give you the stuff you need to know. So for example, Ed Turner, his father, committed suicide. So Ted, at the age of 24, inherited the billboard business, which was saddled by debt with his father's recent purchase of all these other companies. And then notice I convert it to 2025 money. Then what I did was I had to add a section where it could apply it to me. So I actually uploaded to Claude a ton of information about me and my business, and I actually deleted it because I didn't want to show it on here. But where it says Founder's Playbook, it's a section where it can apply that portion of his life to my life so I can learn from certain tips. Because when you read a biography, sometimes you skip over the interesting learning, because if it's a biography, it's often just facts, not what he did was really rare and you got to pay attention to this particular point. And so I did that with each section of his life. And then what I tried to do, like, look, Founder's Playbook, what you can learn. So when he created CNN, don't compete in a category, create a new one. Survive the ridicule. So Ted was made fun of a whole bunch when he launched CNN. It was not easy for him. Here's what people mocked him for.
The Chicken Noodle Network, CNN.
Yeah, they made fun of him all the time.
I feel like Trump could use that now as a great diss.
It's a pretty good one. And then what I tried to do, and this was actually quite challenging, was at the end, I tried to get a whole bunch of photos that were relevant to the era. So I could like make like this, like,
visual timeline.
Yeah. Digital timeline where I could like look at them. And this was actually a lot more challenging to figure out how to do, but it's been really effective. I've done this now with like 3 or 4 different people who I love learning and reading about. And it's made it so much easier, because I used to do this in ChatGPT, but I had to like prompt it in a certain way, and it was always really challenging. So that's project number one.
And this is now like publishable. You can have this on, you could create your own like little Samopedia online, right? Where you're studying great business, you know, the business biographies basically.
It's pretty awesome, man. Because I think when people read, I don't know about you, when I read a book, I always read the Wikipedia of the person or the summary of the book, which definitely gives it away, like the story, but it makes it so much easier to know what to look forward to. And if I know like that he's been divorced a bunch of times, I start reading about his first marriage and I'm like, I know this is going to end, and I could see the cracks already. I could see why.
Totally. It's very helpful to have the like blueprint of what the overall scaffolding of the story is. So then when you're reading, you're putting things in buckets basically, and you know what else is to come versus you go in blind. And then you're sort of it's sort of just like, did they hook me right away? Or you might bounce before you get to any of the good stuff, right?
And what I love doing about David Senra has a podcast called Founders, and he's really good where he's like, check this out. Check this part out of the biography. It talks about hiring, and here's what he says. And then David will say, you know, I've read all these biographies. I've noticed that's a trend amongst a lot of the people as they say things like that. And that's challenging. Those insights are actually hard. And so I put those insights into this project.
That's great. Okay, I really like that. You know, you could actually even make this even more powerful. So right now you're doing the step where you're saying, I want to do Ted Turner and I got to go find the biographies. I got to go get the EPUB and then I got to go download it and then do this. Like you can actually just have an agent do that. You could tell an agent, hey, every week, every Monday, I want you to deliver this to me. So think through who you think I might like, find the right biographies, go get the PDFs for them, put them into this tool, deliver this, and then I want you to send me an email or turn it into a podcast, read it out into a podcast that I'm subscribing to my own personal podcast.
I did not know how to do that, but that's a great idea. And then the really cool part, I didn't want to show this here, but like, you know, my ChatGPT, which I use as like my business coach, has all this context on my strengths and weaknesses and the shit I complain about. And the section where it says Founder's Playbook, it's like crazy tailored towards what I'm experiencing on a day-to-day basis. And that was really magical.
One thing I like about biographies or about reading in general is I have this theory that like everybody today is like anxious and upset about things that like our ancestors would just laugh at. You know, like none of us grown up like, you know, in a war-torn, you know, state or, you know, in the Great Depression or anything like that. It's like you haven't faced real adversity, so you magnify small problems and make them bigger. And so my little quote on this is, we don't need therapy, we need history. And if you actually were a student of history, you would need less therapy. and so I think it's cool what you're doing, because in a way, it's actually founder therapy for you.
There's this crazy story where Ted is in his 40s, and at this point, he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars because of a bunch of stuff that he's done. And he starts CNN, and he invests almost all of his money into it, and no one would watch it. And so he does just ridiculous stuff. For example, late night, they allow one of their newscasters to be a dog and they interview the dog. And another time, it's actually Ted being interviewed, but he puts a bag over his head so you don't know who he is. And he like plays this like secret character. And what's interesting is like guys like you or me or some people who have some amount of success, you think, I can't stoop that low or I can't like, you know, do this stuff. And then I read this stuff. I'm like, look what this guy did. Who's like this, like supposed to be already this successful, prominent person. Like there was another time where he had to get stitches on his forehead because when he first bought the Braves, no one would go. And he did this seventh inning stretch game where it was who could push the ball to first base the fastest with their nose. And he was like, screw it. I'll do it.
He's like a drunk uncle.
And I just think if he's willing to literally get on his hands and knees, like there's nothing beneath me.
Yeah, that's great. And by the way, you could even feed something like that back into your system. So you could say, the things that I remembered and I took away was this for this reason. Remember this about me. I like these types of anecdotes for these types of reasons. So surface those in the future, right? Like create a README file of the things that Sam really resonates with and always check against that the next time you do another biography, right? So the system gets smarter every time.
I have to figure out how to set it up with so it can email me. But I did all this on Claude, I guess, co-work, and it took 45 minutes. It was pretty awesome.
All right, let me show you something. Okay, so I have two big themes that I think are the themes of the year for AI. One of them is mass personalization. So everything personal for you. So what do I mean by this? You know, in the last 10, 15 years, I would say that if you just teleported from 15 years ago to today, so you're like, 2010, maybe even a little earlier, maybe 20 years ago, 20 years ago to today. So you're in 2006, snap my fingers, you're now in 2026. What are the things that stand out to you? And I think one thing that would definitely stand out is, wow, not only is everybody on their phone, which is already like tiny computer, but like what are they looking at on their phone? And I would say one of the biggest inventions was the news feed. And if you think 20 years ago, you know, we had all content was kind of like, needed to have mass appeal. So you'd have the newspaper that gets printed and gets delivered to everybody. So it's kind of got to be a little something for everybody. And now with the TikTok algorithm and the Instagram algorithm and the Facebook algorithm and all that, it's not a little something for everybody. It's a hell of a lot just for you.
Yeah. Like I still remember coming home from school and like we would all watch TRL. Do you remember TRL?
Totally. Yeah. Like, and you know, if you look at some of the numbers of famous TV shows, it's like the last episode of Friends had 55 million viewers. Like more people will view that than will view anything now, right? Some people foolishly, like they're kind of nostalgic for this. And so they're like, I'm going to create something that has that, or I want to get back to that. It's like, no, we just didn't have better options. People have voted with their eyes. They don't want that. They want to look at something that's hyper relevant to them. My wife and me, we have very, very different tastes. Like I want to see, you know, the highlight from, you know, today's NBA games. And she couldn't care less about that. You know, she wants to see oddly satisfying people doing crochet on Instagram because it helps her de-stress after a day of kids or whatever, right? Like we have totally different content tastes and the algorithms now give us that. So this idea of mass personalization, something that would never have been possible, it became possible. Why? Because first, everybody started creating, right? So instead of a journalist, you'd had bloggers. Instead of bloggers, you had tweets. And then, you know, instead of just tweets that are just text, you have some guys who just do just images, some people who do just videos, some people do just text. So everybody became a creator. Supply went up, you know, 10 million X. And then on the other side, the algorithm was able to editorially curate for you based on your signals automatically. So there was no human editor who had to choose what goes on the front page for you. Okay, that's what news feeds did. So I think that's what's going to happen now for software. So I think it's all personal software. So you just showed a piece of personal software, something that you really want to exist that I didn't really need to exist. Today, all software gets built just like the newspaper industry. You know, centrally, some really talented people make it, and they got to make something that's going to appeal a little bit to everybody. But now, what you just did, you showed that you could make highly personalized software, not just Sam who likes business biographies, but Sam, who likes business biographies and is going through these challenges in life right now. And so tell him what he needs right now. That's what that piece of software does. Okay, so I think that's what's happening overall here. And I think one category of personal software is not just in apps, but in anything. So what you did is called vibe coding. So this trend or the thing I'm going to show is basically vibe coding for anything else. So I think that vibe coding, which is you just kind of describe roughly what you want and then the thing kind of makes it And then you're like, yeah, but actually, I think I actually wanted this. Sorry. Right? Like you're just at the table, you're just ordering and the chef keeps making for you over and over and over again. You didn't know exactly what you wanted, but eventually you sort of feel the vibes and you get yourself there. So that's happening for everything. So I want to show you this. This is now happening for not just code, but for other skills. All right. So I saw this on Twitter and this guy basically was like, hey, if you ever wanted to be able to make music, but you don't know how to use Ableton and Fruit Loops or whatever, like all these tools, you don't know what a MIDI is, you don't know, you know, you're not like super musically talented, watch this, just kind of describe what you want. And so I thought let's make one together here. This is totally from scratch. So maybe this will be a bust, maybe it'll be cool. So basically you just describe what type, this is not a song, this is like a beat in this case. And so it's like, how would I do this? So for example, I coach this high school basketball team and we have like warm-ups before the game. We want it to be a hype situation. So I was like, oh, what if we created, so I was thinking like right now I could type in hype basketball intro music for a high school team, high energy build up, make the crowd go wild. I don't know what's gonna happen. Right? I'm not even talking in music terms. I didn't say a key. I didn't say beats per minute. I didn't say what instruments to use. I went straight to the end, as our buddy Elon says. And I just said, this is what I want. Make the crowd go wild with this. And so now you can see that this thing is thinking. And so you'll see it's saying, all right, I'm coming up with like some drums. I'm going to create a track for this. And you can see it's created like stadium, brass, 808 bass, drum kit. So if you look here on the side, it's like, here's the drum buildup. Here's the 808 bass. So let me just play this. All right. I guess it's giving me like the basics. All right. So now let's say, and for each one of these, it's like, hey, I made a hook. You want to keep that or you want to just like change it? Just do a different one. So let me say, add a big drop at the beginning. I want it to be, I don't even know how to describe this. So let me just say like lower in tone, more masculine. Let's just see what it thinks about that. And so now I'm going to send this.
Have you seen that famous clip of Justin Bieber where he's humming to an orchestra and they're trying to follow along?
This is like the retard version of that.
go and look this up on YouTube. But it's like Justin Bieber, who I guess, I don't know if he knows how to play an instrument or not, but he's humming to an orchestra, I guess, or it's like a 12 or 15 piece set. And he's like humming what he wants and they eventually get it. This is sort of like that.
Keyword sorta is doing some heavy lifting in that sentence.
It's cool that you're able to like do this.
So I told it this thing. Now it's like, all right, let me think and let me try to do this. While this does that, I'm going to show you the one I made last night. So let me just. So I made one for the podcast. So I was like, I tried to create a podcast intro song as my first thing. So check this out. So I went back and forth a bunch, but let me just play this. Okay, all right, I'm intrigued. All right, so that was like a little intro loop you could do. And then you could put vocals on top of something like that, right? You can go and add vocals with
That's a different tool.
Or they'll add vocals eventually to this.
Is it called a MIDI? So you can like, it's like you can change the...
So all of this is super exportable. So let's say you're a DJ, right? Let's say you actually do have skill. You can export any of these individual pieces or the whole thing and alter it however you see fit. So like the important thing here is basically skill and taste. To do something, you always needed both. You need skill and you need taste. The skill is like the actual like knowledge of how to use the tools, musical knowledge, like technical knowledge, things like that. Taste is, what do I think is cool? What do I think is interesting? What do I like? And now with AI, those got decoupled. You don't need the skill, you just need the taste. If you have both, obviously you're gonna make better things, but like you could still be in the game if you just do this. So let's just see what it did real quick. This is what I told it to be, make it more masculine.
That's pretty funny.
So like imagine, the lights go out, now this is on volume 100, and our team is running out of the tunnel, lights are flashing, and that's our little like intro sound when we come out.
Dude,
so there's
are we
little
gonna...
things like this that I'm like, wow, I literally... This was just, like I was like segregated. I couldn't go participate in this field at all. I was on the outside. And now I can make things. And because it's so easy to make, I can make it for use cases that otherwise wouldn't have made sense. Like, I wouldn't hire somebody to make this for me. But if it takes me 2 seconds, sure, let me just do it.
All right, let's take a quick break because I got to tell you a story. Let me tell you about the first time I tried to run payroll for my team. I was using a traditional bank, and you know the type. It's got a janky interface. It's built like a 2002 tax form, and it was open only during business hours. And I hit send, and it froze. They flagged the transaction. They locked my account. They put me on hold for 45 minutes, and then they told me I got to visit my local branch. And that was the day I started looking for a new banking solution. After asking a few founders what they were using, I found out about Mercury. And so now my payroll is two clicks. I can wire money, I can pay invoices, I can reimburse the team, all from one clean dashboard. That's why I use it for all of my companies. And so do 200,000 other startup founders. And so if you're looking to level up your banking, head to mercury.com and apply in minutes. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services are provided through Choice Financial Group, Column NA, and Evolve Bank and Trust, members FDIC.
Are guys like Rick Rubin, who like can't play music, but are these creative geniuses, are they like, I'm so happy this stuff doesn't exist when I was trying to convince everyone I was a guru? Because now, otherwise I'd actually have to go and like make
no,
music.
No, I think he's actually pretty big into this. And he's like, yeah, I told y'all taste is what matters. Right? this has been his thing from the beginning. There's actually a very popular, I don't know, have you listened to any AI music? Like,
Well, I listened to where there's a cool John Lennon song that wasn't finished when he died. And they had him sing it.
That's cool. There's a YouTube channel like Impossible Rap Songs or something, and it's basically like collabs with, it'll be like Tupac and then like a rapper today, right? Like Tupac's dead, but there's a rapper today, and they'll collab on a song. It's basically awesome. Like music that couldn't exist, but we make it exist. And there's like first AI musicians that have gotten record deals just recently happened. I think one of the top country songs in the world right now is an AI song called, I think it's called like Walk the Line or something like that. So AI music is a thing. I've been using Suno a lot. I won't bore you with my Suno track. I'll send it to you after this. But like, I make a lot of music in Suno now, and it's incredible fun. Like, if you've ever had any level of a music itch, you got to get on Suno. Forget this little like beat maker thing I showed you in MuseArt. Like, Suno's the real deal, where you can actually make good songs. Like, I no longer, if I'm working out, like, we no longer listen to mainstream music. It's all music we've made for ourselves, me and my trainer.
Really?
And,
like, it's You're our own kidding playlist. Me.
Yeah. No, ever, like, I mean, that's like an hour long playlist every day. And then we can each just add to it. So like, I'll just add a
play
track.
The top one, play the most your most listened Suno okay. song. I mean, I used Suno like the week it came out, and, like, you can't tell it, like, for example, you can't tell it to say, sing Frank Sinatra like this, but you can describe a Frank Sinatra song or a Frank Sinatra voice, and it will create something very similar, right?
All right, I'm going to give you some choices. Do you want to listen to something that kind of makes you feel like you're on drugs and maybe you're in that one show? What's that show called? Like, Euphoria. All right, do you want the Euphoria song? Do you want the indie singer-songwriter song, or do you want like a fun kind of rap song? Which one do you want?
I have to go with Euphoria.
Okay. All right. This is the Euphoria track. It's called
Deshaun James.
Close your eyes. Tonight. You're in the club. Here we go.
This is awesome.
All right. Now, my sister is moving to Spain. So you could just make songs for friends about like whatever's going on, like birthday party or whatever the situation is. So I sent up this song called America's Finished. I'm going to leave America. Swimming pool in Spain, 5G internet. You can call my cellular. It's just
this
a great
is awesome.
Song.
All right. Let me show you something. Can I show you something?
Go.
All right. So, Sean, let me ask you a question. What is the reason why you don't shop online more?
I don't know what's going to look good on me.
Okay. Well, I'm half solving for that. So okay. I love buying stuff online. The problem is that your boy's got big old thighs, and finding clothes that fit is quite challenging. Now, I don't know. Did you know this? That when you, a lot of people don't know this, but I actually don't know like how common this is, but did you know like when you go and buy clothes that there's this thing called the size guide, and you could see the measurement of the garment or of the clothing?
Yeah. Well, yeah, every site has this, but the problem is they're like, oh, is your clavicle 4 inches? I'm like, I don't know. Like, what? Yeah. How do I know these measurements? This is not helpful to me.
So here's what I did. I found, like, I went to a bunch of websites and I found the most common measurements that they ask you.
This is incredible.
I created this photo where I actually just measured all parts of my body that are common. So like thigh, knee, calf, and then like my sleeve length, whatever. And for a long time, if I was going to buy clothing from like a high-end store, I would actually send this to them occasionally. I would say, just send me the right stuff.
You sent them this?
Yes.
To a high-end store?
Yes. And it was incredibly effective.
What did they say?
They're like, I suggest that you buy
We've
this
given
size.
This to security. You will not be allowed in the store.
Yeah. They're like, you are now on a list. I'm telling you, it's weird, but like, it's been very effective. Very strange, but it's been effective. Now, here's what I did. I used Claude Code.
First of all, no way you measured all these things yourself. You had a friend or Sarah who measured these for you. You can't physically measure all these things with one hand like this.
No, I had to have my wife just sit there and do it. And it was a pain in the butt. And so for a long time, I would keep this like in my Google Drive and I would use it as reference when I would go and buy certain clothing. But the problem is that it was just like kind of cumbersome. It was kind of a pain in the butt. And so what I did was I made an app using Claude Code where I would enter in all of those measurements. Then I would have to add two more things. The first thing is I would add a link to the product. So for example, let's say I want to get a dress shirt. Let's say I got to go somewhere and I got to wear a tie and I want to wear, I got to get a dress shirt.
Right.
Now, I'm not sure if I'm a large or an extra large because I'm right in between sizes, but it has a size chart. And so what I did was I built an app where you take a photo of their size chart. Then you get the link of the product so they know it's for this style of shirt, which should fit a very particular way. You enter it in here. So here's when I posted the link. Then I just took a screenshot of the shirt size or of the size chart. And it tells me, based off of these measurements, you should get a 16.5-inch shirt. And here's my reasoning. And in order to like train it, there are a bunch of books on how clothing should fit. And I actually uploaded that to this to like... to have like a reasonable good, to be like reasonably good at picking which sizes to buy. And so I've been using this and it's been really effective. And in fact, I buy a lot of stuff off eBay because I think it's fun. I like finding vintage clothes. And a lot of eBay sellers will put the measurements in there. And the problem with vintage clothing is large, extra large, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant for old stuff. And so you have to go buy the measurements. And, or if you buy European stuff, large, extra large, it doesn't really work because like, if you buy like Japanese stuff, which I do, like they're different sizes. So I actually wear like a 3X in Japanese stuff. And so you have to follow the size guy. And so I made this and it's been incredibly effective. I've been using this for a little while, a couple of weeks, and I've ordered like 3 items based off of the size it told me.
Wow. Incredible. It is incredible what you've made. So you're actually using this to buy stuff.
Yeah. Would you think a guy wearing overalls and a Midwest trash trucker hat would be trying to find the right fitting shirt so there's no collar gap when I wear a tie? You probably wouldn't, but that's called being eclectic, my friend.
You're like, what are those food, like turduckins or like, foods where it's like, looks like one thing on the outside, but it's wrapped and on the inside is a whole different animal that you just didn't even know was there. That's what you are, my friend. You're a turducken.
It's pretty awesome. I think if you are a clothing nerd, you guys will understand what I'm talking about. Or if you're like, in between different sizes, it is kind of a pain in the butt to like figure out.
Are you going to publish these or you're just like, I'm just going to use these myself. I don't need to make this available.
Like the API stuff, it's really expensive. Like I used like $40 this weekend just like on me using
that shirt.
Like it was really expensive, but like I'll use it on eBay. So if you go to eBay and you want to buy like something old or vintage, it tells you the measurements and just like one night of doing it, it's like $3. So no, I'm not going to publish it, but maybe I could charge for it. I guess that'd be a cool project is try to build like an interface that you could charge for.
Wow. Okay. This is cool. All right, my turn. I have a more serious business use case one, but this will kind of blow your mind for like actual being in business. Okay, so what's the high level? I have a company and it's growing really fast and it's scaled from 0 to tens of millions in revenue in like 2 years. Normally to do that, you have to hire a lot of people, right? Because like it's like a services business. Like you have a lot of clients and those clients need to be happy. Otherwise, they're going to like leave at the end of their contract. And so how do you actually like manage all this? And so our team built this tool internally that does the following. It basically reads into all your stuff. So it's like, cool, I got connection to HubSpot. I have connection to your Fathom video recordings from all your sales calls. I have access into Slack. I have access into your accounting software, so I know when bills get paid. I know I can read anything on the inside, okay? That's the first thing it does. Now check this out. Okay, so this is like, let's say this is, this is our dashboard. So any of our team, any of our sales team or customer success team can go in to look at a customer. Okay, so here's a customer, right? And so you just see like, okay, what's the overall, it auto-generates all of these things. Nobody had to manually enter anything. So it says, here's the status they're at, here's when they started, here's who's working on it, here's the link to their project plan, all that stuff. It automatically goes and grabs all that.
Was this like a CRM that you built, or is this like a...
This is the tool, we built it. So now, if I click the renewal, which is like important, right? It's like, it'll say, here's the current ACV, here's the target ACV, here's our, based on all the conversations we've had, like it goes and it reads the last status update, the last client call we had, it analyzes the sentiment, and it says, based on the sentiment, the client's really happy, we have high confidence that they're likely to renew. And then here's what we think here's the adjusted NRR that we think it'll have. It'll be a 7% expansion based off of what we see right now. All right, so that's the first thing you see, which is sick. Then there's like an agent in here that we created. So you could just talk to the contract. You could just talk to the deal, to the customer record. And you could be like, hey, tell me about what are the top three expansion opportunities that we should be pitching them? Like, what other services do we have that they might be interested in based on what you know about them? And it'll look at public info, it'll look at the call transcripts, it'll look at whatever to try to figure that out. It'll look at our internal database of services we offer and cross-check all of them. And it's like, we think it could offer XYZ. And then it's like, cool, can you make a to-do list or make a to-do action, a task for me? It'll update automatically in like our task manager of who's gonna follow up about these expansion opportunities and when. And then it goes and it creates the task. And now that's a task that's sitting there. And anybody else in the company, if they want to go look at this customer, they can see this conversation and they can actually like benefit from it. So they can go, if they go and look at the customer record, they'll see that somebody's already brainstormed expansion opportunities and there's a to-do already created from this. Somebody's already on that.
Has your customer employees found that to be productive, or is it buggy? Like, it works good enough that it adds a lot of value?
Yeah, this is like our command center for the business. This is one guy built this whole thing in 3 months.
There's so much information and so much stuff happening. It's so fast. I'm very thankful I'm not 22 right now. I'm very thankful I'm in the position where I'm in now to be able to use this stuff.
But it would be easier. If you were 22, it'd be easier than ever to be successful.
The competition's way harder.
But the opportunity is like, it's kind of like musical chairs. If you're playing musical chairs and suddenly 5 new players get added to the game, they double the number of players in the game. Yeah, it gets way harder. But if you 50x the number of chairs and you add 50 people, it doesn't matter. There's still so many chairs to go sit in. That's AI. AI is like every single product in every single category, plus a whole slew of new categories just came up for grabs because AI like changes what can be done. And so the opportunity set is so much bigger that, yeah, there's more competition, but it doesn't matter because you would rather have, you'd rather have this huge multiplier on the number of possible ways to win and how easy it is to build than less people.
And every company just needs one of these AI guys. You need many of them in the company.
As many as you can have, yeah. I talked to a guy yesterday who has a company that's a $1 billion company. And I was like, are you interested? Like, what are you doing with AI? Because I know he's smart. And I'm like, he's going to be doing something. And he goes, yeah, I'm constantly messing with Claude Code and figuring out what I can do. He basically just appointed a AI general manager. So he's like, yeah, I actually just like hired not a human. He's like, I just created AI that can be like a manager for these projects. And I'm trying to see how good I can make that. He told me that just in improving customer support with AI and like building, like making the developers more productive and getting rid of his like junior programmers who were not very good, not good at using AI. Just with those 3 changes, he's like, we doubled our profit margin. They're already a $1 billion company. So imagine doubling your profit margin off of something like that. That's like so insane. Here, by the way, here's my last perspective that I think is helpful, because I feel like this somehow, you were excited and then you ended stressed out. So here's my last perspective that I think is helpful. I think if you put on yourself that you need to become, you know, a top 1%, 5%, or even 10% kind of AI builder user, that's the wrong frame. All you need to do is say, all right, I'm already top 10% in business, in content, right? You've already done all that in your life. And now if you just get to like 50 percentile in AI, which is not that hard to do, it multiplies against all your other skills. So the wrong game to play is, let me go try to beat all the, you know, AI geniuses who are spending all day doing this stuff and are more technically oriented than me. That's the wrong game to play. The right game to play is, I already know a lot of stuff. Imagine if I just got, you know, for other people who have my skill stack or my domain knowledge about this industry I'm in, that I've been in for 10 years or 20 years, how do I just use just a little bit of AI, right? How do I just get like just good enough, just dangerous enough where it multiplies against what I've already got? Because if you just compare yourself to the people who are technically brilliant or just on this 24/7, or they're 22 years old and their brain still is like super plastic and they can just learn anything super fast, like, I think you will feel behind, but it's not really accurate. It's not really the way to think about things.
All right, what do you think? Did you have fun?
That was fun. I think we should do this more often. I think we should use this as the forcing function to play with different AI tools and see what we come up with.
I'm down. It was great. It's just crazy how there's levels. So, you know, buying the right size overalls to like, you know, adding 10 points to your $1 billion margin.
To each their own. Let us know in the comments on Spotify, YouTube. We read all the comments. Let us know if you want us to do more of these style of episodes, or if you have a tweak that you think would make these more fun or more interesting for you. We tried to not bring on like an AI expert, because sometimes actually the blind leading the blind can help, because we don't know too much, right? We could both be kind of dummies figuring this out together. And I suspect that that's actually a more fun and better way to learn about this stuff than somebody who knows everything comes on and just spouts a bunch of jargon at you that you don't really understand and you just feel stupid. But maybe we're wrong. Maybe we'll mix in some experts as we go.
All right, that's it. That's the pod. I feel like I can rule the world. I know I could be what I want to. I put my all in it like no days off. On the road, let's travel, never looking back. All right, my friends, I have a new podcast for you guys to check out. It's called Content is Profit, and it's hosted by Luis and Fonzie Cameo. After years of building content teams and frameworks for companies like Red Bull and Orange Theory Fitness, Luis and Fonzie are on a mission to bridge the gap between content and revenue. In each episode, you're going to hear from top entrepreneurs and creators, and you're going to hear them share their secrets and strategies to turn their content into profit. So you can check out Content is Profit wherever you get your podcasts.